Good morning. Up right now on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville, it's the Mind and Heart Show. For the next hour, it's thoughts and feelings and the way they affect our lives and the world we live in. The phone number in the studio is 434-284-9470. Now here's your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier.
Good morning, Charlottesville, on this chilly morning. This is Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show. We're going to go to the news, and then we'll be back with you in a couple of minutes, so stay tuned. And we are back. This is Dr. Jeffrey Frazier on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville, and you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show. We'll have a quick check of the weather, and then we'll meet our guest for this morning. Right now in Charlottesville, it's 32 degrees. Feels a little chillier than that because it's about a 6-mile-an-hour wind. The high today is going to be 47 and sunny. We're not expecting any precipitation, but we'll have a bit of wind, so it's going to be feel chillier than 47, so bundle up. We'll check back with the weather before the end of the show. So this is the Mind and Heart Show. We're here live every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 a.m., and we deal with all matters of the mind and heart. Please join the discussion with us. You can visit our Facebook page, which is Mind and Heart Show, and post a comment or a question. You could send us a tweet at MindHeartWPVC, or email us at MindHeartWPVC@gmail.com. You're welcome to call in with a question as well. The number in the studio is 434-284-9470, and we welcome all opinions and points of view. The only ground rule is that we maintain civility during the discussion. I'm joined in the studio by my producer, Kevin Chapman, who's keeping everything running smoothly this morning. So I want to thank Kevin. So we're very fortunate today to have as our guest Mr. Pat Coffey. I'm going to let Pat describe a little bit about his background, but he's someone who's really been a trailblazer in our area in terms of meditation and other programs, which we'll talk about this morning. So, Pat, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in this morning.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Great. So tell us a little bit about you, about your background, where you come from, sort of how you ended up in Charlottesville.
It's a long story. I'll try to truncate it a little bit so
okay.
It's not to put people back to sleep again. Grew up in New Jersey, went to graduate school in Boston, and while I was in Boston, I was very interested in intentional communities and studying them along with psychology. And one of my advisors told me about a group that was beginning down here that was looking at establishing an alternative community. So drove down to Louisa County one night with a bunch of friends, and we helped establish a intentional community down in Nelson. And that's what got me into the area. I'm not part of that community anymore, but was one of the founders there.
And what year would that have been that you came for the first time?
73.
Okay, a while ago.
Yeah. So.
And I understand that community is still going. It's continued. It has a pretty thriving...
Yeah, they're into their third generation.
Golly.
And I've got a lot of friends out there, and it's a beautiful piece of property, and they've worked through a lot of issues, and they're thriving.
That's great. Understand that Dominion Pipeline is targeting them as one of the possible routes for that new pipeline they're talking about. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, we'll save that one. So you're a longtime meditator. Tell us how you found your way to meditation in terms of your own practice.
You know, I think as a child, I was always kind of interested in the mystery, the awe, the unanswerable questions. And I was raised Catholic, and so there's a mystical sensibility in Catholicism. And what I... But I wasn't drawn to church on Sunday. That felt a little artificial to me. It seemed like there's too much perfume. Everybody was a little gussied up, and they're kind of checking each other out. And I got the feeling that a lot of people that were there didn't even want to be there. But what I, what really kind of started my meditation was during Lent, late winter, early spring. There was a 6 o'clock mass in the morning, 40 days. And for some reason, I was drawn to go to that mass. And at that time in the morning, I think I was probably 13, 14, 15. I think I did it like 3 or 4 years in a row. There was nobody under 60 years old there. And they were kind of in shawls and somewhat tattered clothing. It was a working class town in New Jersey. And these people were earnest. They were ardent about what they were doing. They were praying and they were lighting candles and it was dark. And the priest at 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, all the mass was said in Latin. So it was a very, you know, quiet, mysterious place. And so I just enjoyed it. So I would go, I'd get up and I'd walk there. And I think that that seeded in me this interest to continue exploring the mind and consciousness and the heart.
Interesting. And then from there, what was the sort of trajectory in terms of pursuing that interest in those experiences?
Yeah, well, then in graduate school up in Boston, experimenting with some hallucinogenics. But early on, I recognized, look, this wasn't a kind of spiritual path that could carry you for a lifetime. So I started exploring in the early 70s yoga and meditation. And there was only a few books around at the time. And so it was hard to find instruction or anybody who really knew how to get you started. I started with TM. I remember that, where you're given a mantra and you repeat it and it creates a level of concentration. And then from there, it was kind of one form after another.
Mm-hmm. And the particular form that you practice now, which is, I understand, is called insight meditation. When did you begin to use that method, if you will?
That was probably the late 70s. I stumbled onto that. A friend of mine invited me to come to a 10-day meditation retreat at a farmhouse. And it was down in Floyd County. And there was about 20 of us. And the teacher was a fella who is a retired NASA space engineer, a brilliant fella, who earlier in the 60s was in Los Angeles and was studying with, I think his name was Maharaji. And he asked him, he said, well, who did you learn meditation from? And he mentioned a fellow in Burma, Uba Kim. So this Robert Hover, this NASA space engineer, he immediately set up so that he could go to Burma for like 5 months and studied with this fella. And so he ended up being one of the teachers of this particular technique. And so that was my introduction. It was a 10-day course, kind of jumping in the deep end of the pool.
And it felt like a fit for you? I mean, was there a part of you that sort of thought this seems to be my path?
Yeah, I think right from the beginning it felt like, oh, this is home. This is gonna support me as I go through this life. Yeah. So, but under that umbrella, there are many different techniques. You know, there's probably 30, 40 different meditation techniques under the umbrella you might call insight meditation.
Okay. Now, you founded, trying to recall, 15 or more years ago here in Charlottesville, you founded the Insight Meditation Community of Charlottesville. So tell us a little bit about that and the founding and just sort of what's gone on with that organization since then.
Yeah, that was, I don't know, 96, 97. At that time, I was one of the, I guess you could say, senior meditators, and I was selected to participate in a training program that would allow me or teach me how to offer residential retreats, very intense environments. So I was involved in that program, and I thought, well, I enjoy and am interested in meditation, so why don't I just see if there are other people who are interested? And we began meeting, and in the beginning there was just four or five of us, mostly my friends, and so we explored meditation, we read some things, I gave some little talks, and that was the beginning.
And the community has just grown exponentially since that time, in the 20 years or so, as I understand.
Yeah, the culture. I mean, when I first got interested in meditation, it was like a foreign, very foreign practice, and there weren't many people interested in it, and now it's embedded in the culture. Most doctors and medical professionals are advising their patients to learn meditation if they haven't already, and people that are not practicing meditation probably have it on their lists of to do this. I need to exercise. I need to learn how to meditate. I need to eat better. It's on that list now in America, which is just a little bit shocking to me, but really pleasing.
I suppose not unlike what we've seen in the U.S. with yoga. It's meditation's really joined the mainstream, from what you're saying.
Totally. I can remember being at a local barber shop, and it was a woman barber, and it was a barber shop. It wasn't like a salon or anything. And you're in the barber shop, everybody's chatting, and she says, "Well, what do you do?" I say, "Well, I teach meditation." And she goes, "Oh boy, my husband and I, he's a long distance trucker, and we've been talking about maybe learning how to meditate." And at that point, it like dawned on me. It's like, hey, this is everywhere. Everybody knows something about it. Everybody's read a little something or heard it on the news or listened to Oprah or Deepak Chopra or Tom Brokaw or whoever's talking about it. So it's a wave now. And like any wave, there are a lot of good people offering sound instruction. And then there are people that, you know, they learn it one weekend and try to teach it the next. So it's interesting. It's wild.
Do you see a downside to sort of this commercialization, if that's what it is, or the spread of mindfulness meditation into all these other fields? I mean, it occurs to me that, you know, if we teach meditation to military, does that make them better killers? Just wondering how you see the spread and whether there's any danger in being so widespread.
I don't see a danger. And of course, American culture is going to co-op everything it can towards materialism.
Right.
And towards greater production. And there's nothing wrong with greater production. I remember reading about a Zen master who was confronted in Japan about teaching meditation to a corporation that was involved in armaments and of course part of a spiritual practice involves the examination of your moral code, your personal integrity, and are you doing harm to yourself and others. And so his students confronted him, and they, why are you spending time helping these people be more productive and lower their stress so they could get more done? And his response was, I don't know where this is going to end up. I'm introducing a contemplative practice to these people. And for some of them, they may begin to question their livelihood. And so, And for some of them, they may have the capacity and the power in that organization to change the direction of that organization. So we can't predict where it's going to happen. But if someone is cultivating the powers of their heart, their compassion, their capacity to love, and if they're also cultivating the depth of their wisdom, their understanding of how things operate in the world, and they're continually reflecting on their personal integrity, and what I do and what I'm saying or thinking or doing, is that causing harm to myself or others? That person is in the process of transformation, and we don't know where that's going to go. So I applaud the breadth of offerings in terms of contemplative practices. Like here in Charlottesville, I think if you wanted to, you could probably go to a different sitting group, a meditation sitting group, every night. Some of them might have a Tibetan flavor, a Zen flavor, the insight flavor, but the basics are there.
Yeah. Great. So let's just change gears real brief, because I wanted our listeners to also hear a little bit about the Blue Ridge Prison Project, which is another organization that you founded. And what is the Blue Ridge Prison Project? What's the mission of the project? And just what can you tell us about it?
Yeah, that one's really dear to my heart. 12 years ago, some people from the mental health staff, the therapists out there, invited me in to begin a program.
Out there being?
In Fluvanna County.
At the women's prison,
I'm sorry, yes. The Fluvanna Correctional Center for Women. They invited myself and one other teacher out there, and we started a meditation program for the folks out there. And so for 12 years, we've been going out there. Right now we have at least 4 classes a week that we teach. And some of the people who've been attending have been attending the class for years and years. It is a maximum security prison, so the women, many of them are serving long sentences. And the challenge for folks there learning meditation is their trauma background. Everyone there has been traumatized in every way imaginable, sexually, physically, psychologically, etc. So we modify our teachings just slightly, and it's been very rewarding. The women are very appreciative of folks coming in and helping them, who especially are not on any payroll. So, and we have a what I call a faculty now. We have, we probably have a dozen people who go out there. Usually have 2 people at least. We try to have 2 people teaching a group. So it's, we have a lot of fun. The women have a lot of fun, and they're learning some important manners of being in the world. Impulse control, of course, being a big one. But they're developing their own contemplative practices, and it's beautiful to witness.
That's just remarkable. I mean, I'm guessing that it really provides the women there some tools to make that experience much more, tolerable.
I think it does. Those are the, that's what we're, that's what gets reflected back to us when we're in contact with the women. And we're out there Monday nights, Wednesday nights, 2 classes are running simultaneously. And it's a time where they also treasure, because it's a quiet time. The way our prisons are set up, they're not quiet places, and so this is a refuge for them to come to class, and they are very supportive of one another And it's a time where they can really let down their guard, so to speak, and show their hearts. And yeah, I can't imagine not going out there.
Mm. And I understand there's a waiting list always to get into one of the groups, that it's the word is sort of spread throughout the institution of how what a positive experience this is.
Yeah, there's 1,200 inmates at Fluvanna, and we've always got a waiting list of over 100, sometimes 150. So it's a challenge, you know, it's a challenge to have enough classroom space to hold the classes and to continually offer them, and it remains popular.
Boy, that's great. That's great. We could probably spend a whole show talking about that, but I had a number of other topics I wanted you to talk to us a little bit about. So getting back to meditation, the practice of meditation, is it something you could describe to us in a couple of sentences or more in terms of what is meditation? I mean, I'm guessing some of our listeners have heard the term but don't really have an idea of what it involves.
Well, I'll give it a try. There's two main qualities of a meditative heart-mind, so to speak. And one is that there's calm, tranquility. And then the other is, simultaneously, alertness. So it's a natural state that we all fall into from time to time, where we're very calm and we're very alert. Artists, musicians, athletes, they talk about it. They, you know, you hear the term, I was in the zone. Michael Jordan talks about, you know, everything slows down. He's hearing all the sounds, the squeaking of the sneakers. He's seeing the sweat flying off the players near him. And yet he's completely alert and calm at the same time, and that aids you know, the capacity to play at that level. So we all fall into that at times, and we remember those times. But this is a way of cultivating our nervous system to default into that space more and more of the time. Calm or tranquility and alertness together. If we just have calm without the alertness, then there's a kind of spaciness, dreaminess, and that's not it. And if we just have alertness without the calm, then we're moving towards anxiety. So we're cultivating this middle path that has those two features.
And there's also a corresponding set of ethics, values that typically are seen as a critical leg of the stool or part of the practice. Could you just speak to that a little bit?
Yeah, the way I like to explain it is that first of all, we know what happens when we're in a cycle that is causing things to get worse and worse, a vicious cycle. We say or do something that creates an issue. We contract, kind of get smaller, our perspective shrinks. Then we react and say something that makes a situation even worse. So a vicious cycle, everybody gets what that is. And especially around the holidays when we're locked down with our relatives, anything's possible. But a virtuous cycle, that's what a contemplative practice is. And so there's, I like to look at it, there's three aspects. Okay? We have the mental and heart training, which is the actual technology of learning how to meditate. That's one. But that's just one aspect. The other aspect is equally as important, and without it, the virtuous cycle doesn't happen. And that has to do with, as I mentioned before, personal integrity. Personal integrity. You know, what we think, what we say, what we do can either help move us towards more harmony in our life more harmony in our relationships, or it can move us in the opposite direction. So a person who's developing a contemplative practice is reflecting all the time on their life, what causes harmony and what causes harm. So the more that we clean up our life in this one aspect, the deeper we're able to fall into meditation. There's less agitation going on in the system. And then the third area is that when we're, let's call it what it is, when we're meditating, it's an altered state. It's a state that allows greater creativity, that organically supports and allows the arising of insights into our life or into greater spiritual questions. It could be out of a meditative state, all of a sudden you realize, ah, now I get why that relationship is fouled up. Now I see it more clearly. Or it could be a kind of spiritual understanding, like, oh, now I understand why I suffer. Now I get it. I'm always trying to grasp on really hard to what is the pleasant, and that never stays there. Or I'm constantly thrashing around to try to get rid of things that are unpleasant. Or so there can be personal insights, spiritual insights. So with that wisdom factor coming into play, that informs how we live our life. And so our life gets a little cleaner, which then allows us to go deeper into our mental and heart training or meditation, which then creates even more profound insights, which then affects our life. So this virtuous cycle, once a person gets traction in that, there's real transformation. And it's not just personal. It will affect everyone around them, of course, their families, their communities, how they see the world. So vicious cycle versus virtuous cycle.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7. We are the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. I'm your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier, and my guest this morning is Pat Coffey, talking to us about meditation and meditative practices. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back with some more discussion with Pat. So please join us either online or give us a call at 284-9470. We'll be back in a moment.
You're listening to The Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. The Mind and Heart Show is heard every Saturday morning from 9 to 10 on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The number in the studio is 434-817-9470.
This is Scientific American's 60 Second Science. I'm Steve Mirsky. Got a minute?
Creationism evolves, and sometimes those new strategies succeed.
Nicholas Matsky, an evolutionary biologist, currently on a fellowship at the Australian National University in Canberra.
So I think a lot of people, it might not have been on their radar, that we have two states that have a statewide policy that encourages teachers to introduce sort of false criticisms of evolution. And it also, more explicitly, tries to prevent administrators from doing anything about it if they have a teacher that's doing this kind of thing.
Those states are Tennessee and Louisiana. Matsky used to work for the National Center for Science Education, the NCSE, which tracks these legislative efforts to get religiously motivated creationism and its thinly disguised offshoots like intelligent design into public school classrooms. Matsky and the NCSE were involved in the Kitzmiller versus Dover case in Pennsylvania, in which the judge found the inclusion of intelligent design in the biology curriculum to be a violation of the First Amendment. December 20th marks the 10th anniversary of that decision. But dozens of similar bills that do not explicitly mention creationism or intelligent design have been proposed since.
Over the years, I had kept in touch with NCSE people, and we had always talked about, you know, we're like, these bills that look like they're just being copied and modified, you know, we should do a phylogeny at some point, you know, do an evolutionary analysis of them. So we've gotten up to being about 60 bills. I took all those bills, lined all the texts, coded all the characteristics, all the variations between these texts, and then ran them through the standard phylogenetic analyses that we use for DNA. We use them for dinosaurs. They get used to study virus evolution. Those same programs can be used on texts that have been copied and modified.
Matsky's tongue-in-cheek, or rather panda's thumb in a creationist's eye, analysis is in the journal Science. It reveals a high degree of relatedness among the bills. That is, legislators make slight alterations in bills either from their own state or other states in the hopes that this time the particular wording will get the bill passed.
And with the phylogenetic analysis, we can tell, you know, when do these steps happen and how influential are they on future anti-evolution legislation. So it's worth alerting people to the fact that these bills exist and alerting people to how these strategies change through time.
Thanks for the minute. For Scientific American's 60 Second Science, I'm Steve Mirsky.
And we are back. This is your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. You're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. We're very fortunate this morning to have with us as a guest Mr. Pat Coffey, and we're talking about meditation, types of meditation, opportunities to learn meditation, which we'll get to shortly. But at this point, we're going to continue with some broader discussion. So, Pat, is mindfulness meditation a religion? I know there's been some pushback from some religious groups that don't want it taught in schools because they believe it's pushing a different religion.
The characteristics of meditation, being awake to what's happening now, cultivating of compassion, love. You can find meditative aspects in every religion. And so the mindfulness movement is secular, and essentially it doesn't conflict with any religion. We've had people from all religions come to us in our little group and study. That includes fundamentalist Christians, Jews, Muslims, Hindus, and all the variety of Christian faiths. So there's not a conflict there. It's not a body of religious beliefs.
Okay. But the type of meditation that we're talking about this morning does come from the Buddhist tradition, does it not?
Yeah, for the most parts, most of the parts of it are derived from Asian Buddhism. Of course, we don't know the very earliest derivations of these practices, which predate what I call the modern religions, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, Judaism. These practices for exploring mystery predate all the modern religions. But they're most, you know, meditation seems to come to us mostly associated with Buddhism, although it is found in Hinduism, Islam, and various forms of Christianity and Judaism.
So sometimes I'm guessing folks will ask you, do I have to become or be a Buddhist in order to practice this particular form of meditation?
Yeah, we hear that question from time to time. It always makes me smile. And the answer is no. The characteristics of a contemplative practice are, you know, may be seen to be at the heart of all religions. And there's no ownership to these practices assigned to any particular religion. And people of various faiths who have deep meditation practices, they're not arguing. Their experience is similar. The arguments that seem to be in around religion are around the institutionalization of the religion, surface arguments. But those deep practitioners in Christian mysticism, or say, for instance, the Sufi order of Islam, of those who study the Kabbalah and the Buddhist practices. And, you know, there's a commonality of experience that is expressed, and there's not a there are not issues amongst those people who practice deeply.
So there's a universality, if you will, of a common thread that runs through the mystical aspects of all the world's great faith traditions.
I'd say that's true.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now another branch on this tree is the whole application of mindfulness meditation to health issues. Maybe you could talk a little bit about the work of Jon Kabat-Zinn, but there's a huge revolution as well in terms of applying these methods to medicine and mental health.
Yeah, that's what's sweeping our culture. I mean, we are a scientific and psychological culture. And so when these practices migrate across the globe and land here, we have our own versions or modifications of these practices and applications. And the application of contemplative practices now is incredibly widespread. It's almost like every major university in the world now has a growing emphasis on exploring the capacities of these practices, trying to scientifically understand what's going on in the brain, the heart, the body. There are some there are 50, 60, 70 published studies in journals each month that have to do with an examination of mindfulness practices in one form or another, whether it has to do with creativity, whether it has to do with memory, whether it has to do with specific groups that have one either mental or physical ailment or disorder and its effect on them. But generally, what we're finding is that a person who practices and has cultivated a practice, their immune system is stronger, their creativity is stronger, their memory is better, their relationships are better. It's across the board.
But health as well. I mean, regular meditators aren't pumping out massive amounts of cortisol, the primary stress hormone. We know from studies that regular meditators, those cortisol levels is one marker really significantly reduced. So we know that it's really a way to address overall stress issues.
Absolutely. A person who has a contemplative practice is cultivating a perspective on the world that is very much in line with nature. When you think about nature and the foundation of nature, it's all about change. There isn't anything that's static. Whether you look in the macro sense or the micro sense, if we look at what we know so far about the universe, everything is moving. Nothing is in the same place. The earth has never been in the same place more than a moment. The earth is spinning, it's, I don't know, 11,000 or 12,000 miles an hour. We're going through space at 70,000 miles around the sun. Our whole solar system is moving at some incredible rate of speed, approaching 1 million miles an hour. We're part of a galaxy. There are billions of stars like ours. The whole galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, is moving at 1 million miles an hour. We go the other direction. We're looking at the structure of the atom and the movement there and the change there, and then into subatomic particles. And then we get down to, well, what is going on here? Is it just vibration or light or what's happening? So we're on the frontiers of both ends of that, but the common thread is it's all changing. And as a practitioner begins to internalize that, we all know that intellectually, But as a practitioner begins to internalize that, when they find themselves in a situation that's unpleasant, difficult, or challenging, there is a support from that growing perspective of understanding of, okay, this is the way nature works. You know, everything's
changing. It's not personal.
It's not personal. Old age, sickness, and death is part of the deal.
Yeah.
And so it's no wonder that now they're measuring the cortisol levels and finding that people who have a practice are, let's just say, they're more readily recentered or less often thrown off their game into panic or, you know. So there's more and more research every month. It's astounding. It's even hard now to keep up with it.
Yeah. And also there's been a movement to incorporate this meditation practice into folks that are dealing or recovering from substance abuse, drug and alcohol abuse. So that's been another frontier.
Yeah, there's probably the integration of these contemplative practices now into many of the 12-step programs. Because the and any of the other therapies that have to do with addiction, because the cultivation of current moment awareness is critical, recognizing what's going on and then creating a choice in the practitioner. I mean, it's like eating late at night. Okay, we all know that that's probably not the best thing. Just find yourself in front of the refrigerator, you're opening the door, next thing you know, you're pulling stuff out. If you can pause and just, okay, what am I feeling? You know, oh, there's some loneliness, or there's some just a little bit of anxiety. And then there's a choice. With that recognition, there's a choice. Do I have to eat to soothe myself, or is it possible to just feel those feelings as they course through the body? Can I be with anxiety? Can I be with some loneliness? And what a practitioner discovers and builds confidence in is, yes, you can once identified, you can then feel it, watch it change in your body. It's no different than anything else in the universe.
So it puts a pause in, and so I'm having this impulse to pick up a drink or whatever, and it helps me put a pause in there to kind of decide whether to do something else or proceed with picking up a drink.
Right. Where it's aiming people with addiction problems is, okay, what are the foundational activities that are arising here? Is it fear? Is it loneliness? What is it? And teaching them to be with those experiences from their inception as they arise and then pass away. And so as they begin to get some traction in a practice, they're able to recognize the arising of those feelings early on. They can be with it. They start developing confidence as they go through one cycle after another. It's like, this is some loneliness, or this is some fear. I can be with that, or this is anger, or whatever it might be. There's a confidence that builds, that it doesn't take up all the air there's some spaciousness around it. You're not choked out and totally identified by it.
And some of that spaciousness is the realization, is it not, that we all experience loneliness, we all experience anxiety and fear. It's, again, it's not personal, it's part of the journey.
It's part of being born.
Yeah.
And each of us are not having unique experiences that haven't been had by millions of people before, and there are ways of working with it that are healthy and can allow us to develop strength and confidence in our ability to live this life fully.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to the Mind and Heart Show on WPVC. We're at 94.7.
in the Progressive Voice of Charlottesville. This morning we have as our guest Pat Coffey talking about meditation, and we'll talk about some resources locally in just a moment, but I wanted to give you a weather update. It's currently now 36, so it's up a few degrees. Again, we're still looking at 48 and sunny today with no precipitation, but some slight winds to maybe make that 48 feel a little cooler. A couple of program notes before we wrap things up with Pat this morning. Beginning Monday, you can, if you're just joining us or unable to join us, I guess you wouldn't know this, but you can listen to the interview with Pat on the it's cvillepodcast.com. It's C-V-I-L-L-E podcast, P-O-D-C-A-S-T.com. And just go to that site and click Mind and Heart, and you'll see where you can stream the interview that we're doing with Pat this morning. Another program note, we will not be on the air next week. That's the day after Christmas, December 26th. We will not have the show that day. We'll be back with you the following Saturday, which I believe is the 3rd of January. But check our Facebook feed, and we'll update that as well. But no show next week because of the Christmas holiday. So, Pat, tell us a little bit about what are resources, where can someone find out about the Insight Meditation Community of Charlottesville, what programs do they offer? Give us the overview, if you would.
Well, we've got a full menu now of activities available to somebody who wants to learn meditation. We've got, you can go to the website, which is imeditation.org, and that's the letter I, meditation.org, and that will apprise you of everything that's going on. Essentially, we've got 4 or 5 beginner classes each year, we limit them to small groups so that you can ask a lot of questions and get clarified, and by the end of that introductory course, you will know how to meditate, you'll know why you're meditating, and you'll be off and running. Tuesday night is our kind of larger gathering at the Jefferson Area Board for Aging main room, and we meet there at 7:30, from 7:30 to 9. We have a guided meditation with some instructions, so you don't need any instructions to come.
So a new person could come that hasn't meditated,
yeah,
and find a helpful instruction would be available.
Yeah, and so we have that, and then one of the teachers at IMCC gives a little talk about some aspect generally of how meditation can work in your life, or how to use meditation to help you with just the various issues of life. We also have residential retreats now, which is really a way to kind of quick start your practice. We have one coming up in May, and we're down at Serenity Ridge in Nelson County. It's close by, from the 13th to the 20th of May, and that's on the website. So we have a spring and fall retreats. We have day-longs. We have some other classes that we offer. So check that out, From Soup to Nuts, and there's lots of people interested. And to be developing a practice like this, it's very hard to do by yourself. You almost need to have some contact with other like-minded people who are also interested, and start developing some friends where you can kick around ideas and support one another. So Tuesday night, 7:30 at Java, come on by.
And then there are a couple other opportunities downtown during the week, I believe.
Correct. At Common Ground, which is in the Jefferson Center.
Right there by Staples.
Yeah,
across the street
in the
from
middle
Staples.
Of the day at noon and on Wednesday, and noon on Friday. So those are small groups of people that get together and meditate.
And you have to pre-register, or do you have to? Is there a fee involved? What are some of the requirements for?
There's no fee involved. Of course, we appreciate any donations that are offered. We're a tax-deductible organization, so. But there is no fee involved.
And Jefferson Area Board for Aging, I believe, is behind Fashion Square Mall out 29.
Yes, if you know where Toys R Us are, if you're heading north on 29, you turn down that little road where Toys R Us are, and you make a left, and a couple hundred yards on the left is Jefferson Area Board for the Aging, and we just come through the main doors right to the big main room.
You mentioned the introductory class. I assume that walks people through, sort of gets them jump starts or begins a practice for them, and there's also some instruction about some of the values and ethics that we talked about.
Yeah, it's a complete offering in terms of if a person signs up for that course, they will learn a number of various techniques. They'll learn techniques of cultivating the heart. They'll learn techniques to create calm and alertness, reduce stress, etc. And we like to say that everyone is a contemplative artist, meaning that each individual will paint their own contemplative artistry. So a particular practice that I may be doing might not be one that you would be doing.
Okay. You know, you hear a lot about these practices, and especially in terms of some of the teachings from Buddhism about reducing suffering in this life. And if you found that to be the case in your own practice, I know you've been a long time practitioner of meditation. Have you, over the course of your life, seen a reduction in your own suffering, whether you define that as psychological suffering, physical suffering, existential suffering, whatever?
Well, when we get born on this planet, there's certain things that are going to happen if we live long enough: old age, sickness, death, loss. And what a contemplative practice does is align us more with just this flow of nature, and that becomes internalized. And I guess I could say that it helps manage the vicissitudes of life with more grace.
So you don't get buffeted around by these prevailing winds, whether it's a crisis in your life or a move or a loss. It helps you sort of take those in stride. Is that what you would say?
There's certainly an aspect to that. There's still the deep grieving for loss, but there's a perspective around it. You're actually feeling more deeply, seeing more clearly with the perspective of this kind of bubbling, ongoing change that is the nature of nature. And so there's more of an alignment with that. It's not that that a practitioner feels less. They actually feel more. But it's feeling more in perspective. It's courageous living. It's turning toward experience, not away from it. And through that turning toward, through that walking through the door, there is a reduction in suffering, both mentally and physically.
If you have joined us late, you've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. Our guest today has been Pat Coffey. We've had a fascinating discussion on meditation. You can hear this through the podcast beginning on Monday at cvillepodcast.com. So please join us again in 2 weeks. We won't be on the air next week. And now stay tuned at the top of the hour for Straight Talk with Andra Hakes. I think they're going to be talking about forfeiture in criminal and civil cases, if I have the terminology right, but stay tuned for Andra's show, Straight Talk, and we'll see you in 2 weeks. Best wishes for a happy holiday to everyone out there.
You've been listening to the Mind and Heart Show with your host, Dr. Jeffrey Frazier. Be sure and tune in again next Saturday morning at 9 o'clock for another edition of the Mind and Heart Show, only on WPVC-LP, Charlottesville.